This is the Happy Employee Podcast, brought to you by Start Within.
Hi everybody, Mike here at Start Within. This week on the Happy Employee Podcast, Abby shares a fascinating discussion with Richard Etienne. Richard is Deputy Head of Internal Communications at the Department for International Trade and also the co-chair for the organisation's BAME network. He shares his experiences working at 10 Downing Street and also his inspiring message on how we can empower diversity in the workplace. Enjoy.
So, hi, Richard.
Hi, Abby.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been really looking forward to talking to you. Just so the listeners are aware, I thought it would be good to explain that we actually met at an event during lockdown, so a virtual event, and you spoke on that event, even though you weren't the build speaker, you just did a short piece that was off the cuff, and it inspired me the most out of the whole event, and your piece is what I took away from the event, and since then I've been following you on LinkedIn, and I think you have some really interesting and inspiring things to say, and you're doing some really great work in the internal comms industry, but also working on introvert workshops as well, which we'll talk a little bit about later on. But today we're talking about embracing diversity, and in particular how organisations can embrace that in the workplace. And I think that when we talk about diversity, people often think straight to race or gender. But again, what I find interesting about your story is that you actually apply that to personality types too. But yeah, before I talk to you about yourself, why don't you start by introducing you?
Thank you, Abby, and really appreciate that introduction. So yeah, I'm Richard Etienne. I would say I'm a mid-30s dreamer. You seem to have walked into some really life-altering experiences throughout my career, which obviously I'm happy to expand for a bit later. But yeah, for now, I'll say yes, as you said, I'm Deputy Head of Internal Comms within the Department for International Trade. The focus there is leadership communications. And essentially what that means is I consult all of the senior civil servants within that department on best practice regarding internal comms. And I'm also the BAME Network co-chair, and have been in that position or post since November 2019. And I'm also a Guardian Masterclass tutor on all things introversion.
Yeah, so you said there your job is Deputy Head of IC. You've had, like you've said there, a diverse and interesting career. So how did you find yourself in internal communications?
It's interesting. It all actually started back... way back when I started working at MySpace, and I managed a music blog.
That is way back, MySpace.
Right, exactly. interviewing superstars like Beyonce and Akon and other stars at the time.
You interviewed them.
So I was a videographer.
Right. Okay.
While they had a journalist interviewing them, but the great thing is, you know, I get to do all of the pre-prep bit, you know, the microphone and
amazing. Sound check. Yeah. So you touched Beyonce.
Yeah, I've never actually put it like that, yeah. what that did led me into roles that took me to Buckingham Palace, for example, where I was there for what seemed like every other week to film members of the royal family for the Commonwealth Summit back in 2018, to then becoming Theresa May's personal videographer for all of 2019 up until 2018 and 2019 until she stepped down. And one thing I really enjoyed about communications is that you get to spark global conversations and with all manner of diverse people, diverse thinking, personalities, and so forth. But what really attracted me to IC was the fact that I was going to be communicating with what essentially would become a work family. So, you know, and having to consider all of the different individuals, characters, you know, wherever they're from. And it really enhanced my communication because it made me think about certain things like accessibility, diversity, and tone of voice, and sharing other people's stories, because a company is nothing without its people. So to promote the people is the best thing that you can do within IC. So that's why I joined the International Trade Department last year. And I'm what now? Just over a year in that role. And I can't imagine being anywhere else. It's great.
So you mentioned there a minute ago about you worked with Theresa May as well. So you were her videographer, is that right? During the campaign while she was in Downing Street.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I had just come off the back of the Commonwealth Summit, which I mentioned earlier. You know, having met the Queen three times, and you know, flown to really great places, and then to go into a role like the videographer to the Prime Minister. I didn't even know it existed before I joined, actually, to be fair. And one thing that was really incredible is the fact that I would get one-on-one time with her every single week. And we would travel to, you know, Argentina for the G20. We're in New York for the UN Assembly. We're in Brussels every other week. And I got to tell the other side of the story, that, you know, the Brexit story, because that's what we saw in the press at the time. And, you know, she had the quote-unquote Maybot persona. But what I was able to do was work with her to bring out her personality, help her to appear and feel more relaxed in front of the camera. And, you know, we got to a point where she started dancing, right? So it must have worked.
Yeah, so, I was just about to say, were you or were you not responsible for the famous ABBA entrance?
I was not responsible for that. but I'd like to think that her comfort in front of the camera during our time together allowed her to just feel free to do that. And, you know, I feel like mission accomplished really after that point.
Yeah, because like you say, working in internal comms, it's more than just a communication, it's telling a story, isn't it? And it's getting to know the people behind the job. And in Theresa May's case, without getting too political, she may be the best at politics or a great leader, but it was that personality and that personal approach that she was often critiqued for. So yeah, internal comms within the organisation as well. It's all about that personal approach, isn't it?
I agree completely. In fact, you know, within International Trade Department, the most commented, liked, shared content on our intranet pages are the ones about people and personal stories from, you know, countries around the world where our people are. You know, we are based in regions in all of the continents, and everyone has different experiences, talents, and they want to share them with our individuals back in what we call HQ back in London. And so, yeah, it's something that I always champion. And as head of leadership communications within the department, I try my best to get the senior leaders to show more of that personal side and essentially tap into the why behind what they do.
And so you've worked in a lot of official environments, so the government and the cabinet office and at Downing Street, and a lot of those environments are what you might assume is all white males, especially Tories and possibly even middle class stereotypes. So I just wondered, how did you crack that industry? What did you do to stand out?
I had to be the very best, Abby. I had to. Steve Martin once said, be so good that they can't deny you. And so I let my work speak for me, and that ultimately led me to becoming very trusted among senior officials. You know, the Downing Street director of comms would only let me film the Prime Minister for all of the big moments, you know, and but it still had its moments of almost what I would call a cold slap of reality, because there were countless times where I would travel with the Prime Minister and we move in our bubble together, you know, and security, despite I'm standing next to the Prime Minister, security in other countries will pull me out and ask, you know, to search me and why am I here and have I got the right pass or whatever. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, I'm literally walking next to my principal, yeah. And you know, you're asking me for security checks. Like, I'm the only black person here. Can't you see what's wrong with this?
Yeah.
And that was a regular occurrence. So it just, it goes to show, no matter where you are, what level of status you have within any industry, racism will always prevail. Mm. And it's just, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's really heartbreaking to hear that. And yeah, it's so poignant right now with Black Lives Matter, obviously, has recently come to light. And I think it's really important that we continue talking about these things. And it's not just one of these phases that's happened off the back of something. I think it's something that we need to ensure is embedded into the culture in our organisations, which I guess is what you're doing now with being the BAME network chair for your organisation.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we as a network have two clear aims. You know, the first is to create a sense of community within the department to allow BAME colleagues to thrive. And the second aim is to challenge the structures within the department that prevent BAME colleagues to thrive and succeed. Mm. So, you know, I've used my experience and career history as the basis of my leadership style. And I, at some level, would like to be an inspiration as well to the members of the network, to show them, like, you can do this, you can do this. And I am with you. And please let me know how I can help you, how my co-chair can help you, because we all have different lived experiences. And I'm not naive to think that, you know, my experience is normal. Some would say I'm quite lucky, quite fortunate. And while that may be the case, it doesn't stop me from wanting to ensure that my BAME colleagues within the department are able to fulfill their full potential in whatever way possible.
What is your BAME network doing then in the workplace to empower that BAME community?
Well, the great thing about the network, especially as a co-chair and, you know, part of the committee we put together, is it gives us a seat at the top table. So we get to sit with our executive committee members, permanent secretary, and we're able to present to them recommendations for them to action in order to help us to fulfill our aims and objectives. And these aren't recommendations we've just plucked out of the sky. You know, especially during lockdown, we've hosted a lot of virtual drop-ins to allow members to talk about issues that affect them, whether it's, you know, the recent COVID or current even COVID-19 pandemic, and, you know, the Public Health England stats that have come out to show, you know, for black people, black and brown people essentially are four times more likely to contract the virus than white people. And, you know, so that means a lot of our colleagues have had bereavements. You know, there's that stress that's a lot on our colleagues. Then there's the anxiety of returning to the office. And, you know, how can we as a network influence the policy that the organization puts together to influence that? And obviously, as you alluded to earlier, the Black Lives Matter movement, recent protests off the back of George Floyd and many other tragedies that's happened recently. So it's allowing us, as I said, to get that seat at the table, present recommendations, and actually inspire real change.
And I assume everyone can get involved in that, and you don't have to be in the BAME community to be involved with that group. I mean, everyone can make a difference, right?
Exactly. And you know, we recently set up an allies group for our white colleagues to join. And there are more members in that group than in our entire BAME network. So it shows that we are all in this together. And yeah, nothing changes unless something changes. I can't remember whose quote that is, but that is something that always sticks with me. And it's good to see that the conversation is still continuing, where in, you know, recent times, the press would have moved on, conversation would have moved on, and it would have been yesterday's headline.
Yeah, you're right. So sticking with the BAME community then, I wanted to talk a little bit about how that relates to employee wellbeing as well. I personally think that supporting employee wellbeing isn't just about providing that mental health support. I think it's also about that acceptance and that inclusion, which you're doing so much work on right now, especially with the BAME network. But statistics show that the BAME community actually have a higher chance of suffering from mental health issues. So whether that's because they face different societal challenges that affect their mental health, or facing racism or discrimination that you've mentioned earlier. I mean, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's inevitable considering the various trauma we go through every day, you know, social, economics, injustice at the hands of law enforcement, microaggressions in the workplace, COVID-19, as we mentioned earlier, you know, has exposed even further the imbalance in our society. And, you know, we actually haven't even discussed the legacy of slavery, right? If you think about it, this is a business so corrupt that living British citizens have been helping to pay back the country's debt to, you know, slave plantation owners up until 2015. We only finished paying the debt in 2015. It's a trade so entrenched in our history that many of us still carry the names of our owners in our surnames. Like, I can trace back, based on my surname, you know, who owned my family. Like, how insane is that? So of course it's going to affect us as a people profoundly. And you know, that's why, you know, as I said, it pleases me so much to see that you know, my white colleagues are really pushing to support us as a community, because we need our white peers to become part of the solution. You know, black and brown people, we're tired, you know, we're so tired to have to carry the task of trying to end an injustice that we didn't create. So stronger together, that is the line and the term that I want.
Yeah, stronger together. I think you're absolutely right. And those things that you're saying about slavery, it's still shocking for me that we're all lacking in education about it. A lot of this I hadn't even heard about or had no idea about until the whole Black Lives Matter movement, and had no idea of the history of some of the statues and different things that we have as part of our history. So I think it's a really important movement and is really teaching us so much right now.
Exactly, yeah.
So the last part then, I wanted to talk a little bit about your introvert workshops. You said that you're a Guardian masterclass introvert workshop tutor. But before you explain that, what is an introvert?
So introversion is all about energy. In fact, I always talk about introversion and extroversion. The line I give in my classes is the difference between the two is how a person gains and drains energy. Like, that is simply it. If you as an individual find that people drain your energy, if you spend long periods of time with other individuals that you feel that you need to get away and recharge, you're probably an introvert. And then the opposite, you know, if during this lockdown, if you've been living alone, for example, and you've really struggled because you need people around you in order to help to give you energy, then you're likely to be an extrovert.
Yeah. It's really complicated, isn't it? I'd never thought about it before until I was reading about some of the stuff that you do. And I think my friends would think that I'm quite an extrovert because I'm quite outgoing with my friendship group. But then if it comes to work or something where I need to speak up and maybe show myself off a little bit, I'm actually quite shy and reserved. And it's more complex than just being an introvert or an extrovert, isn't it? It totally depends on the situation.
Exactly. So psychologist Carl Jung, who came up with the term introversion, extroversion, he said there is no such thing as a pure introvert or an extrovert. And such a person would be found in a lunatic asylum. So if you think about it, most of us are probably ambiverts, which sits right in the center. And as you said earlier, Abby, you know, it's situational. So we will slide up or down the scale. You know, you may be more introverted when it comes to public speaking, but more extroverted when it comes to socializing. That's completely fine. It's completely normal. You know, I'm a parent. I step into my extroversion when I need to entertain my child. And I'm more introverted when, you know, my mother's giving me a dressing down. You know, it's just life. It's situational.
So do you identify as an introvert or an ambivert?
Yeah, I would say I'm an introvert, and it's purely because of how I recharge. I am very sociable, but for a very short burst of time. So, you know, when I say let's go for one, I literally mean it. Let's go for one drink, because after a while, I can't explain it. I just start to feel my energy depleting. And if it's a one-to-one situation, possibly like, you know, in a park or in a garden, I'm okay. But it's that group situation that I seem to struggle with after a period of time. And it's interesting because I knew I was a bit different from when I was in school. And, you know, after school, I'm having my dinner and, you know, the boys and girls would knock on my front door, my dad would go to the door and they'd be like, oh, Mr. Etching, can Richard come out to play? And from from like adjacent out of, you know, view from the children, I'm signaling like no. Because my whole thing is like, I spent 6 hours with you. Like, why do you want to spend more time? I'm done. And so I always thought there was something wrong with me. And then in my adult life, I read a book by Susan Cain called Quiet, and it spoke to me so profoundly. And that's when I realized, oh, no, I'm not shy. I'm not weird. I'm an introvert. Because, yeah, there were elements where I would just be really confident. And there were others where not so. And, yeah, Susan Cain essentially changed the way I see myself.
Yeah, I've just written that down. I definitely want to have a read of that. So do you think that this has had any sort of negative impact then on your life or your career being introverted?
No, I can only say it's been positive, because it was at that moment after reading that book that I started to step into some of the roles that I've had recently, and all I can say is finding one's identity is so liberating. It has allowed me to reach my full potential and inspire other introverts to unleash what I call their quiet power.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. I mean, for me, introversion's always got that kind of negative connotation, just because I think about me as a child, and if I was shy, it's always like, don't be shy, come on, step forward. And you it's just that societal thing, isn't it, that you've got to be loud and put yourself out there. So to say that actually to look at your CV and everything that you've achieved, and that you're actually saying that no, this has had a positive impact and I've got that quiet power. I think that's really inspiring and will be really interesting for a lot of people to hear.
Yeah, it's an extrovert's world. You know, it's made by extroverts for extroverts. And it does start in school, as you alluded to, Abby, because, you know, if you're the one that raises your hand in class, you know, you're celebrated for being an active participant. Or, you know, if you're able to stand in front of a crowd, a class, and, or, you know, the whole school at assembly, you know, these individuals are celebrated. If you're the person who engages in group play, again, celebrated as someone with so good social skills. But the person over there that has, you know, engages in solitary play or likes to read a book, there's something wrong with her or him, you know. It's not helpful, because these things stay with you as you grow older. And that's why, you know, introverts only make up something like 3%, you know, of the top execs in, you know, the Fortune 500, but, you know, FTSE 100 companies. So it's until we change extroverts, we won't change the world. And I don't mean that in a radical way, but it's about helping extroverts to see introverts. Sometimes I don't even feel like they see them. They don't see us. So it's just about, yeah, getting us all in the room together and saying, look,
yeah, we
all see each other here. We all have talents. We all have contributions to share. Let's engage.
Yeah, and that was going to be one of my questions, actually, is like, what can employers do to address not only the visible differences of diversity, like we've talked about, such as race, but then there's also gender and sexuality, that there's so many things out there that people are doing for, but how can we address the diversity within us, such as being an introvert or an extrovert? Because it's harder to determine, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, diversity of thought and character is so crucial in attaining a well-rounded view of any situation. So if you think about, you know, men always make decisions in, you know, tech, road safety, AI, and look at the negative impact of that. You know, we have mobile phones that are so huge and heavy. Like, even for my hand, I have this iPhone, and I sometimes have to hold it with two hands to reach the top of the screen. It's annoying. And then, you know, with artificial intelligence or smart tech, you know, there was this video I saw. I think it was a soap dispenser or a hand dryer or something like that. And, you know, it only recognized white skin. And it was just like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then the road safety, the crash test dummies are always based on an average, or I'll say, 5'10" male. And so, you know, women have suffered injuries from airbags because of the impact, the velocity. You know, like, if there's not diversity of thought in places where safety, you know, and tech and finance and you know, communications, all of the elements that keep us alive and connected, especially in this Western civilization, it's only going to cause a divide. And, you know, the underrepresented groups will always lose out.
Yeah. And that's really scary to hear as a 5'1" woman. And actually, I hadn't even thought about that, about the phone size thing until you've said, but I've actually got like a lump on my little finger, like a little, sounds horrible, like a little callus thing, where, because I struggle to reach to text so much. But it's one of those things, isn't it, that you don't think about and you just put up with because it's the way it is. But well, yeah.
Nothing changes until something changes. We're going to change the world, Abby. We'll do
it. We are. So, you've been providing these introvert workshops then that have been big sellouts and are featured in The Guardian. So we've talked a lot about introversion, but if you want to just tell us a little bit more about those workshops and why you think they're so important.
Yeah. So if you think about it, many people find themselves overlooked in the workplace, or they become overwhelmed by job interviews, and, or they feel that those who make the most noise become the most successful. So these workshops, they're intended to help introverts to thrive, really step into that quiet power that I mentioned earlier, you know, thrive, not survive. In this world that's designed by and for extroverts. And also the workshops that I do, you know, I welcome extroverts to join because there's a piece especially for managing mixed personalities. You know, introverts make up almost 50% of the world population. So there's a good chance that, your team will have introverts within it. So my workshops help to engage with extroverts and empower introverts. And my website, richardetienne.co.uk, I always have the latest dates of when you can join. They sell out really quickly. Now we're in lockdown or doing the online version, which is great because, you know, you don't have to travel into London anymore to attend. So it's really great. And yeah, my next class is in August. So yeah, richardetienne.co.uk is the place to find out where to join.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that they're selling out more in lockdown. And I think it might not just be that we've got more time on our hands, but also, like you say, introverts struggle with that speaking up and getting out there. And we're not physically there in the office anymore to wave our hands and get noticed. It's more being at home. It's how can we get noticed? How can we be heard?
Yeah, exactly. And especially in the meeting context. And what I try to do in these classes is show the benefits of this new remote working world. So if you think about meetings now, you know, the table, like the physical table has been removed. So there isn't this hierarchical layout where all the loud and important people, or perceivably important people, sit in the center and debate while, you know, the extroverts are on the wings. There's no, there are fewer people, you know, speaking over. And you don't need to physically raise your hand. I mean, a lot of these great apps now, like, you know, Zoom and Teams, you know, you can click the raise hand function. You can chat in the text IM section. So you can still have your voice heard without having to combat the awkwardness or sometimes even fear of having to speak over or cut into someone's monologue. A little tip, though, that I found quite helpful is if you do want to speak and someone is rambling on, interject by using their name rather than doing the customary, sorry.
Yeah.
When you apologize multiple times to interject, it just doesn't work. And actually, you haven't set yourself up to say something that people will really take on board. But there's something about saying someone's name that just stops them dead in their tracks. And I've tried it a few times and it does work.
Oh, it's a good little tip. I'll be sure to use it. So thank you, Richard, so much for your time today. I think everyone can take something away from that, whether you're a manager or employee or people that are struggling with their own diversity or mental health. I mean, everything that you've said about being an introvert and worrying about the way you are and if you're different, I think it's been really inspiring and comforting to hear your story. And as such a successful person as you are to have worked with the likes of Beyonce to Theresa May and the royal family, I think a lot of people would take a lot away from today. So thank you so much.
And thank you, Abby. Thank you for having me and all of our Start Within listeners. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks. So if we do want to continue learning more about you and following your journey, it was richardetienne.co.uk.
Exactly, yeah, that's the website. I have a blog on there, lots of free downloads. You can download my Introvert Survival Guide ebook for free. It's all yours.
Amazing. Brilliant. Well, thanks again, Richard, and have a great week.
Thank you, Abby.